Hi everyone, hopefully you can all hear me. And welcome to tonight's Q&A. So we've got March Q&A and we've got some questions that have been sent in, which I'll answer first, and then I'll go through and answer the stuff that gets sent in if we have time after these questions. So just for your information, you can get on the question box. You can actually type in your question, and I will see it, and then we can slowly go through them. Hopefully, there'll be some lots of interesting ones tonight. So to start the process, as per usual, I'm a plumber and builder by trade, so anything I say here is my opinion. You need to seek qualified advice. There is a question tonight that's around super, and I will say up front here, and I'll say it again when we answer the super question. I'm in no way allowed to answer any super questions, and as well as that, Dimpna wouldn't be allowed to answer them because she's not registered with ASIC. That's why she has people on stage and professionals around her that can answer those questions for you. And so I will say that straight away that I'll answer what. So I go through these questions with Dimpna, just make sure that we're all on the same page when it comes to responding to them. And obviously, again, it's my opinion. You need this is not advice in any way. So you need to get qualified advice from the professionals that Dimpna provides around there in the circuit. So there's quite a few of us on there. Let me start with this one here. I actually might try and make it a little bit bigger for you so you can see it better. That is a word. Okay, here we go. Hi, Dimpna and Ian. We've been in the process of getting market ready, which involves selling off our negatively geared properties and refinancing to access more equity. Fantastic. Our position after selling these properties that we have $130,000 available redraw plus an additional $420,000 in equity. We are now at the point of looking for deals that fall in line with our goals, which is to replace our current $160,000 income with passive income over the next 3 years. We're currently looking at a deal in Ballarat, Victoria that is 403, returning 32,000 in rent, net cash flow of 4 to 5k per year. As is, there are two homes on one title with potential for reno increased rent. Our question is whether we should be looking for cash flow positive deals like this, or should we be doing chunk deals first to build up more equity? Okay, so you've got a fair amount of equity there with a reasonable income of 160,000 salary right now. So for us, we would look at that and go, look, there is enough there to be able to go out and straight and buy straight out cash flow deals. Not so, the difference between you manufacture income through it or you buy one that's already. So a direct income deal where you go out and buy one that's already cash flow positive, which sounds like this one is. Or an indirect one where you go into it and you do something to the property, you increase the rent on it, and in that way you indirectly increase the yield and increase the cash flow. So one thing that I have to say to you is, Paul and Nicola, is that definitely right now you need that a lot of students miss a lot. I would say that 70% of students think that they have to go out and do a straight out chunk deal, or they have to do a straight out cash cow, and that they can't mix the deals together. Our bread and butter deals, the deals where we, so the bread and butter deal for me is different for other people. So for us, our bread and butter deal is buying a house that is cash flow positive or close to it, building on the back and doing something on the back, using a scenario that will bring us extra income out of that deal, and keeping them, revaluing them, moving on. So that means that we've got a cash cow and chunk deal in the same deal. Now a chunk deal doesn't always have to be I buy in, I do what I need to do, I put it back on the market and sell it. You can do a chunk deal simply by revaluing the property and getting your money back and going again. I'll give you an example of a deal which I'm going out tomorrow on handover. There's a handover for us from the builder. And it was a 400 odd purchase. It's about owes us about 440, 450 before the build. We spent about 500 on the build, so it owes us around $900,000. When you look at it, obviously most of that is bank money, but some of it is our money into the deal. So we then revalue it, and it revalues at 1.2. Now, at 1.2, I can get, just quickly work that out, I think it's 960, 1.2 times 0.8. Yeah, so it values at 1.2. We go back to the bank and we say, look, we want you to revalue the property. They say, yeah, we think it's 1.2 now that you've got three units on the site, because you've got the old house on the front, which becomes a unit, and then you've got a duplex on the back. And they say, we're going to give you 960. Now, remember, it cost us $900,000 with our money and bank money into the deal. So when the new banks come along, and because it's a unit development, we'll be splitting it off to different banks, they will say to us, look, we'll give you $960,000. We go, beauty, that's fantastic. That meant that every cent that we put into that property, we've got back, plus another $60,000. And that's our chunk money. So in that deal there, roughly out of the 900, we probably had to put in $175,000. And now we've got our $175,000 back, plus another $60,000 to go off and do another deal. Now, for you in this deal here, you're going, okay, well, there's two properties there. You could do a number of things. You're saying it's 4 to 5 passive at the end of the year. You could go off and sell one of the homes, if you could do a subdivision on it, and make a profit on that home and pay down your debt on the other property. So what do we got here? $403,000. Let's say that you separate the titles and you can get, it's 403. Let's say you could get 300, I'm going to use round figures. Let's say you could get $300,000 for one property. That would mean that you've made a profit on the deal, technically, on one side of it. You say you made $50,000 or $100,000. Let's say you made $100,000 profit. You go across to the one that you still owe money on, which is $200,000. You've got a loan on it of probably around $160,000. You could use your $100,000 and pay down the debt on it, and you'd end up with a loan, technical loan, on the property of $60,000, which will make it more positive. Then you will redraw to 80% off and go off and invest again. Now, it makes perfect sense to me, and it's easy for me to explain, but it's difficult for you to understand. And I remember being at the position where I go, oh, what was all those numbers that Dimna said? I can't even remember. I don't even know what she's talking about. This part of thinking and going through your mind and working out what you can and can't do and the different options that are available. Now, you might just do a straight out sell on that and make some money and increase your equity and go on. But remember, every property that you can keep in 8 years' time, generally across Australia, will double in value without you having to do anything to it. So manufacture your growth yourself, be in control of your own little mini boom, and then at the same time, keep as much as you possibly can. Now, if you're in a really high-risk area, well, you might consider doing a sell-down, because for me, some of our properties are in high-risk areas. And for that purpose, I look at my, what I call the break-even at the end of every week. So what does it cost me for all my interest, for all my agent's costs, for my council rates, insurances, any other costs that come into it? What does it cost me at the end of the week to keep that deal? And what do I think the rents are going to go down to? I don't care what the rents are now. You know, rents might be $800, $900 right now. When the dust settles in the high-risk town, am I confident that I can get $400 a week or $450? Now, if I think that I can get $450, well, in that case, I'll make sure that's what it owes me or less. My break-even is $400, $450. And that way I know that when the rents drop, if they ever drop, that I'm covered. And anything above that for now is cash flow. You might even consider paying your debt down while you're getting good cash flow and not taking any of that money. Obviously, you'll have to pay tax on it, but that's just what it is. Okay, so the question was, should be looking for cash flow positive or more equity? You're in a position where Dimna says, if you've got $200,000 plus, you can go looking for a straight out cash flow deal. For me, I actually like to mix them up, and I like to manufacture potential in my deals. Generally, if you go and buy a straight out cash flow deal, you're giving someone some extra money down the line that gives them a profit out of the deal. So I prefer to make my own profit out of the deal and keep it cash flow positive. If it's negative, I don't want to keep it. If it's positive or neutral, and I don't want to, you know, I don't want to say that neutral means that I get my depreciation and then it's neutral. I want it to be straight out neutral. And then I'm happy to deal with it from that point forward. So look, The answer to the question is, depending on your situation, what you want to do. I would stick to strategies where you can manufacture your own growth, but at the same time get some potential around increasing cash flow and equity in the deal as well. Okay. Sorry, this is very late. I understand if it doesn't get answered. Well, it's getting answered. I have about 80K to invest. I'm looking for a purchase around 300K for a reno or basic subdivision. Do you have any suggestions about where would be good areas around the price point? I live in Sydney, so the closer to there, the better. Okay, so great to know that you are going to spend $300,000. Now, you've got $80,000 to start with. I would like you to go to the website, which I will do here. And for some reason, it's been playing up on me. Oh, where did you go? Let's go back here. So if you go to the website and you go to downloads, the top link on the downloads is a spreadsheet that Christine set up last week. And it will give you your purchase price according to what you say, the spreadsheet and PowerPoint. So purchase price spreadsheet and PowerPoint. That one there will give you what you can afford to buy. So hopefully a few of you saw that 2 weeks ago when I did the webinar on that. And that's around the action plan and what can I afford and all that sort of stuff. So see if I can find it. Price calculator. I'm sure I stuck it somewhere. Purchase price calculator, I think we called it. Purchase price calculator. No. Anyway, you can download that. Watch the webinar, really simple. It'll take you to what you can afford. So to me, okay, you've got $80,000 and you want to buy something around $300,000. I think you probably need to buy in a cheaper area. I'm not a fan, as you probably know, if you've seen the 3-day boot camp, of doing a straight out renovation. I think it's a tough way to make money. I think that reality TV shows made it look like reality and it actually isn't. So to me, I have an issue with renovation as a straight out concept. The only way that I feel that you can get a good renovation deal is if you find either a termite damaged property, a flood damaged property, or a fire damaged property, in which you're buying it cheaper and you'll be able to go and make some money that way, because most people will look at it and go, oh, too much problems. I think that they're actually good deals. So that's the way I'd go. Now, your question around the basic subdivision. So you're going to need to know what your basic subdivision is going to be. Obviously, the best subdivisions you can do, which are technically not a subdivision, are two lots and single title. That's where someone's bought two blocks of land at some point in time. They only have one title over it, but they're two lots, an easy lift. Council deals with it and it's done. The corner block is your next easiest, where you can, you know, because you've got two street frontages, you can just chop off the backyard and go to the other street. And then the splitter is the next easiest, where you just have a really wide block and you split it through the middle. And then you've got your battle axe is your next one, where that increases what you can do. So let's think about your question about where do you go to. Now, I'm not going to tell you some areas around it, but what I can do is, hopefully the internet is still working for me. Just let me minimize this and get rid of this. So one tool that I found in recent times is, if you Google free map tools, the top hit is something you can use that will, and I like to go radius around a point on a map. So free map tools, and what it'll do is bring you up a couple of entry points that you can put in, and you can then use that to find out where you want to go to. Now, the radius distance, you say you're in Sydney, you might decide that you don't want to go any more than 300 kilometres away from the place that you want to be. Now, let's just presume that you live in, what's the suburb? Let's say Botany, which is near the airport. Let's put Mascot, for example. Mascot, which is the airport. And I go draw radius. Now, if it is a bit sluggish working at the moment, this internet connection, and you may lose me and drop in and out, what will happen is, if the internet was any good, is that you'll end up with a map and it'll draw a 300k radius. Now, you might decide that you want to go from 200 to 300k's, and this is not working. We'll come back to it, hopefully, and it'll show up, and I'll show you how that works. But that free map tool is you put in your radius, you put in your distance, and then you draw the radius. Then it'll be a matter of going, okay, well, I know that these towns that are within 300 kilometres of here are now put on a map. Now let me go into realestate.com, Investor, Domain, RP Data, Price Finder, APM, whatever you want to use, and find what the median price for those properties are. And let's have a look at the potential. Now, what I'd be looking for is making sure that you're looking in a suburb that doesn't have, you know, 500 or, you know, 100 places for sale, because that's not going to be good for you unless you're revaluing and you're chunking by a revalue rather than the chunking for a sell. You want to look at the rentals that are in the area. You want to make sure, you want to know what the area has and the potential it has for three bedders or two bedders or four bedders, or do they want single room rental markets? You know, those sort of things are the things you need to do. Obviously, at the 300 or less price point, you could go, you know, when you're talking about Sydney, you could go past Kiama, because Kiama is pretty expensive. You could go north, probably inland a little bit. Some of the Hunter you'll pick up for 200, 250 inland. It's a bit sluggish at the moment, but remember that the rich people make their money in the lows, not in the highs. So you might look at that potential. It won't be a quick turnaround. Then you might go west. Well, anything on the western side of the Blue Mountains, you're going to be able to pick up. Some areas in the Blue Mountains, you can pick up cheaper deals as well, especially if they're termite damaged and all the rest of it. So, look, I've given you a couple of areas where you could investigate. Now, I'm not saying they're good or bad. You can find a good deal in any area. You don't have to look at a particular area because it's a hot spot. I don't agree with hot spots. I think you want to be in lukewarm spots. Remembering that Sydney's just taken a big capital growth rate in the last 9 months. So you've got the pebble in the pond effect. So Sydney's rattled and obviously the ripples are going out. So if you can catch on to one of those ripples, not only are you going to have the potential to manufacture your own growth, you could follow up with some capital growth on that too. Hello, how are you? I'm interested in attending your program. So I presume that this person has sent it into the Boholt office and hasn't joined the program. So they're not going to get the answer to this, but I'll answer it anyway. I'm not a naysayer, but just curious how one can avoid the pitfall of asbestos during reno, as I'm keen to flip some units for quick small profit. I know licensed asbestos inspectors can give better advice, and I have spoken with a few of them, but what's your take? My thing on this is I really don't mind asbestos. I really don't think it's an issue. I think that when you're talking about asbestos, it scares a lot of people, and rightfully so, because it kills people. At the same token, though, you could get 10 different quotes and you will get probably 1,000% difference in quotes. You'll get $200 to $2,000. That's the sort of variance that you'll get. So I would be very particular with making sure that you get multiple quotes around the asbestos, and be sure that you're not doing it yourself. There are some states and some legislation that you allow you to remove a certain amount per day, but you would want to be very careful that you're not doing it all yourself, that you are disposing it of correctly, and that you do know the costs and also the way that you need to do it safely so that you're not harmed. So if it's more than a certain amount of square meters, which I'll allow you all to do your research on, it's not hard to find it. If you're going to do more than that, I would seriously consider looking at other people, but that are qualified to do it. I would say that for me, asbestos isn't a big issue. It's a good negotiator when you're actually trying to buy a property. And it's one of those things that's very easy to dispose of as long as you've got the right people to do it for you. Not a problem at all. So just let me quickly go to see. No, it hasn't updated. So we've got a bit of an internet issue going on here. Dim hasn't paid a bill at farm. Just kidding. Hi, Ian. In February Q&A, you have briefly stated that you joined Dimmer in 2008 and in 2011 already replaced your income. I'm currently having very first property for subdivision and renovation. I was wondering if you can tell us in more detail about what you've done to achieve that in such a short period. I've found the turnaround time is pretty long. Seems no way I can replace my income in 3 years' time. Okay. Well, let's just say that you need to start thinking positive, because when I started thinking positive, things moved very quickly. So for me, I joined in 2008, and for the first 2 years, I didn't listen to a word that Dimpner had taught me or was trying to teach me. And let me quickly take you to my scenario in a slide so you can see it. And hopefully this will open up relatively quickly so you can see what's going on. So for me, our scenario was, let me go into the slideshow. So our scenario was, we had our original home, which was a trophy property. We had six other investment properties. Now, thankfully, I bought investment number six when a week after the boot camp. So I went to a high risk area and I said, I'm buying this property. I've got enough equity and I'm going and I'm buying this. The problem was that even with that 20 grand positive geared property, I was still negative 36. So by selling off six properties, one, two, three, four, five, six. Yeah, so I had seven properties. By selling off six properties, I was going to go from minus 36 to positive 20 in one hit. Now, some of you were in that situation. Some of these properties we could have done something to. We could have built on them and we could have got more money out of them. We actually lost about $300,000 selling down. So just let me take it. That was our PPR, which was costing us 22 negative. So it was our first home. We'd moved out of it and made an investment property and it was costing us 22 grand, but I was emotionally attached to it, so I had to get rid of it. And so let me get to the next one. So by simply for us, when we sold down, it made some cash available and we went off and we used that cash to buy one more property at the 11-month period. So we had the purchased one was $21,017. So that took us to $39,000 in the first deal. We revalued this purchase down here, which although it cost us $292,000, remember I lost $300,000 selling down here. All right, I took a big hit. So when we revalued this property, we got money back plus a bit more, which meant we went and did something to the investment property and we bought a few other properties. And in that time, we managed to get to the point where I could leave work. So that gives you a simple snapshot of what we did. Now, we were in a position, obviously, that got us to there. You might say, oh, well, I'm not in that position. I haven't got any property. Okay, well, then you're going to have to go harder. You're either going to have to go high risk, which means, you know, probably single mining towns, and whether you think that that's a good or bad idea. Now, remember, single mining towns have their ebbs and flows, and right now a lot of them are having the low parts of it, and you might consider that now is not the time to go in there. So, okay, what other strategies are available for you to be able to look outside the square and say, how do I do this? Okay, well, let's go to Victoria or New South Wales, Victoria has the best boarding house laws or rooming house laws in the country. New South Wales closely followed behind it, where you can do deals and you can rent by the room. You know, so I'm actually at the moment putting together a very long detailed piece of information around all the states and how you can rent by the room. Now you might say, oh yeah, but if I rent by the room, I've got all the dull bludgers going on there and I've got bad tenants and all that. I don't agree with you. I think that's your perception. I think you get some very good tenants in there and we're testing the market, and properties that would have a four bedroom house that would rent for $350. You can get single room renters for $180 each room. So you calculate that, you're increasing your yield straight away. So you might need to look at different scenarios around that. I'm going to present that boarding house stuff to the Quantums in Extreme Income and a little bit in Fast Profits as well, so that you can see what that will mean to you. So to me, I would say it seems no way I'm going to replace my income in 3 years' time needs to have a better sentence put forward to you and in your mind so that your unconscious mind can say, I believe in you too. So I'd like to see you to say that my first deal has taken me some time. I've learnt so much from doing my first deal that I now can see that it's going to be easy to replace my income in 3 years. When you start turning these sentences around to make them positive, you'll start seeing things appear in front of you. It might be a bit airy-fairy for you. It was for me at the time too, and Dimpner opened me up to that. And here I am, living the dream. Hi, can we please discuss the credit rating changes that implemented on March the 12th? The good news is that positive behaviour on time payments will be reported to lenders, not just negative behaviour. Actually, quickly, I might just quickly check out any questions that have come in. Okay, let's start at the top. Jared's asking about when he can hear the 5-year plan that we put together as a family. It's a little bit personal, actually. We do play snippets of it at Millionaire Weekend, just because there is some stuff in there that I obviously don't want everyone to see. I'll try and put something together for everyone so what Jared's talking about is our 5-year plan. We've put together our vision in 5 years with a song behind it and some people speaking about it, our kids speaking about it and what their day would be like in 5 years' time. So we're visualizing what that is. Okay, Rodney. I'll leave that one for later. Yes, everyone is muted, because if I didn't mute everyone, I would have 1,000 conversations and kids and dogs barking in the background. So that's why everyone is muted. Can you repeat that address? I presume you're talking about free map tools is what you want. Okay. A ballpark price on renovating a 3-bedroom home, double brick with rising damp in each room and termite damage. Jesus. Look, that's a $64 question. You're going to have to look, when you're talking about renovation, I have some rough rules of thumbs. So get your pen ready, because I'm about to tell you the rules of thumbs. If you're doing a cosmetic renovation, cosmetic renovation is where you're going in, you're doing a little bit of tidying up of the garden, you're painting, you might put new door handles on the kitchen, you'll regrout the tiles, nothing major. Okay, so you're not pulling stuff out and putting stuff back in, you're just tidying them up, putting makeup on it. I allow 9% of the purchase price to look at spending on the renovation. So if I bought a $300,000 property, I would be spending no more than $27,000 on that renovation. And that's how I do it. Now, if you're going to do termite damage and you've got rising damp and you've got all the rest of it, you need to add that to there. And are you going to get your money back? The next renovation is what I call a code assessable renovation. And that's where you go to a private certifier and you do a little bit of work around moving some walls, putting a new kitchen in, replacing the bathroom, maybe adding another bathroom somewhere else in the house. So nothing major, but still a fair amount of work going on in the property. And the way I'd say code assessable is that you can still live in the property while you're doing code assessable renovation. I allow 16% of the purchase price. So for $300,000 property, you would have to allow $48,000 for that renovation and no more, and make sure that you can get your money back on it. And then the last renovation, the rule of thumb, is the structural renovation. That's where you can't live in the property while you're doing this renovation. You're knocking the back of the house out, you're replacing the kitchen, you're adding new rooms, you're going up, you know, new bathrooms, lots of different work, and that's 31% of your purchase price. So if you bought a $300,000 property, you would have to spend $93,000 on the reno. Now, remember, you've bought a $300,000 property, you've spent $91,000 on it, you've got interest to pay on that and stamp duty, and so the end result would be that you should be selling around the $500 if you were trying to get your money back plus a profit. So that gives you some understanding of ballparks. Okay, I'll leave that one there. I like asbestos as it scares everyone else. Yeah, absolutely. Andrew's at one of our builders that's out there doing some good jobs, and he says that he loves it. high end, what are the advantages, disadvantages of subdividing as against strata titles? The advantages, Jonathan, are that it really comes down to your money movement. The advantage of a subdivision versus a unit development. So let me paint the picture here. You can go onto a block of land, and in some blocks of land, it will be big enough to do a subdivision where you create two separate distinct titles that are in no way joined together. Okay, so they're not that one person can buy one and one can buy next door, and they don't have anything between them except a boundary. Then you can go on that same block of land, instead of subdividing, you might be able to put three units on it, which means that you would strata title them. You'd have a body corporate or a community management scheme where all three units are tied together. There's a body corporate that looks after the common area and all that sort of stuff. When you're doing that, the beauty about a subdivision is that a subdivision will give you the ability to revalue the property once you've split the title. So once you've done the subdivision and you've connected up the extra connections, then you'll be able to revalue and you'll have an instant equity increase, which you can go back to the bank and then you can do a build on each one of them separately. Now, there are extra costs in doing that subdivision, because in a subdivision, you have to allow for a sewage connection on each one. You have to allow for stormwater on each block. You have to allow for water on each block. So you can do the revalue and you get more equity, more ability to continue the deal as a step-by-step process. When you do a strata title deal, you only need one sewer connection, one stormwater, one power, one water, though you need to build all the units on the site before you can get a bank back in to value it and split it up. So it depends on your situation. It'll depend on when you do the numbers generally, a subdivision will give you more end value and will give you better ability to move along the way. A strata development will actually be quicker, though, because you can do it all in one hit. Yes, with the asbestos, always pay someone else. It's probably the easiest thing. What's your experience with convincing a council to rezone an area from lows red to highs reds? I would not do it. That's a five-year battle. Just go and look for the areas that you need to buy in. Go and door knock and do that. I actually know of a few that have rezonings in at the moment for people that can afford to just wait for that. And, you know, people land bank on the fact that that might happen. I think that's a tough ask because, you know, it's going to go to a council meeting and then there's going to be people negotiating, all that sort of. Would like to vendor finance. Okay, I'll answer that one later. What would be the best strategy to create cash flow at the moment? Keeping properties is not a strategy that is suitable to us. Well, you've got to keep properties if you want cash flow. The only other way you can do cash flow without keeping properties is if you do a sublease. So, you know, I'm looking at the potential at some properties right now where I can go in and do a 2 or 3 year lease on the property where I know I can rent by the room and I'm taking the risk. I can afford to take that risk. You might decide no. So I would say go in. You can do a lease at 450 and you might decide that you want to rent by the room and you might get $600 or $700. Well, say you rented at 450 plus cost is 500 and you can get $700 by renting by the room and you can manage it that way, remembering not to break any laws, because you can't just go and rent seven rooms. You might be breaking laws. You need to know the law state by state, which is why I'm putting it all together for the quantums. If you could get $700, well, that's 10 grand cash flow for 2 years that you're going to get by renting that property. Now, remember that at the end of the 2 years, that deal could be gone. You may need to spend money on that property as well to get it. You know, you might need to put a disabled bathroom in or whatever and fix it up, add extra walls, and you need permission for all of that. And you need the ability to. So that's a strategy just off the top of my head that you could use. My photo with my long hair, that was my Nadal days, my Spanish Nadal days. Lee Whidden says they like asbestos as well. My mum was left. I'll answer that one later. I'll answer that one later too. Okay, so let's go back to here. So on March the 12th, the credit score rating changed in as far as, geez, what happened there? Come back. Oh no, I'll have to open recent. Damn. Sorry guys, I just closed the wrong document. Let me get this right. Okay, so let me close this one down. All right, here we go. So we have a new credit rating system that came in, which is very similar to the Americans. And that's where if you've got credit cards and you pay them on time, it affects your credit rating in a good way. So every month, if you, you know, fulfill your needs to pay them off to zero, then it will show on your credit score. If you've got more credit cards, then it will show when you go for a credit alert. It'll be a credit alert for you. And it'll show up when you're going for a loan. So the questions here are, my questions are around how will this impact us when we apply for credit? For example, if we apply for a home loan today, we have five credit cards, but we tell the lender that we have one credit card, they will need to take our word for it because there's no way they can know unless the credit cards are with that lender. No, your credit score will have all the credit cards that you have available to your usage and how much they are. If you have to give full disclosure, if you do not give full disclosure, that will actually be a credit hit against you and it won't look good for you. The date the account was open and closed and credit limit. Does this mean all accounts will be visible to the lender? Absolutely. If we forget a card and say we have three when we really have four, what impact will that have on our application? Well, it's going to affect you. So I quickly spoke to Scott from Investor Loans Network, who runs the show, and he said, look, there is definitely some issues around it. He did send me an email, and it's not opening up, I don't think. Let's see. What I'll do is, oh, there it is. Okay. Oh, no results found. Well, that's no good, is it? There is a couple of articles around it. The other thing you can do is you can go to My Credit Score. What is My Credit Score? So www.veda.com. It has a whole list of questions that you've got in your head down the left-hand side and the frequently asked questions. And more importantly, what you want to do is actually sign up to one of these plans where you get your monthly credit score rating and everything around that. But all these questions down here will answer what your credit score means, how it works. I suppose you're going to ask for the web address. And let me just copy that. And I will put it into your chat box. Chat. So on your left, on your GoToWebinar control panel, I'm going to put in there the web address and I'm going to send it to everyone. So www.veda.com, so .au, that's VEDA. And all of you should have this because you can have people pretending to be you and asking for credit alerts for different, but for asking for credit for different things, and you may not know what's going on. And you could end up with a damaged credit rating through no fault of your own because someone's doing the wrong thing. So I would do that. We now have this page uploaded. So let's draw the radius, see if it does it quickly. No, not yet. Okay, so look, essentially when it comes to lenders, it needs to be full disclosure. You need to be out there telling them exactly what you're doing. You need to tell them all of the debts that you have. Because if they find something that you don't have, they'll just knock it back and it'll be a hit against your credit rating, regardless of whether they record the fact that you told them, you didn't tell them everything or not. The next lender's going to say, why did you have another credit hit? So you've got to be very careful every time you go and ask for credit and they do a credit hit on your VEDA score. It will show up and lenders in the future will be going, how come you've had so many hits on your credit score? We want to know more information. Full disclosure, veda.com.au is where you need to get that. Good afternoon, Dimpna. I've knowledge of a bank foreclosure. The outstanding mortgage is 163. It's probably worth 250. Could do a cosmetic reno of 60. And I have 60 grand capital gain. So let's see, 163. Now, just let me start you here, Barry, firstly by looking at the deal. The mortgage is 163 and you want to do a cosmetic reno. So that's going to be 9%. So say that you're going to spend 15,000. So 163 plus stamp duty is probably going to take you to 175. You're going to spend about 15 to 20, so there's 195. You've got holding costs, that's 200. You're going to sell it for 250, and you've got to pay an agent out of that. So there's probably only 40 grand profit if what you're telling me is correct. I want a lawyer solicitor who is very competent in Victoria land deals and understands options. Okay, so to find out that, just go to your Ultimate Forum page, and on the right-hand side, you've got contacts here. Open up the contacts page and go scroll down to Pacific Law, and Pacific Law have a setup around the country for all the people that know property from a legal perspective. So contacts page on the right-hand side of your Ultimate website, and you will get that. So there's Pacific Law. Ring them up, tell them what you want to do, and they will tell you. So that fixes that problem, that question. Problem, the guy who is on the property at the moment is not aware that I know of the situation. He doesn't want to pay rent and they want to foreclose. I'm concerned that the guy is approaching mental instability, and when he is evicted from the property, who knows what he may do. All right, so my first question is, how intelligent is he? Is he going mental instability because he's a lawyer and he's got too much pressure? So I need a structure that there is absolutely no reference to me being the ultimate beneficiary of the purchase and subsequent sale. Well, the bad news there is, No, there's no way that you're going to be able to buy it in your own entity without listing yourself somewhere in there as a beneficiary or as a director of the company. Now, it's more likely that they're going to do a company search and find that you're a director. My question will be, is he smart enough to do that? I know of a marriage split up that happened, and the solicitors on the other side knew that they'd purchased property, but they couldn't find the property. They could have done a company search. I don't know why the solicitor didn't do that, but they couldn't find it. So someone has to be smart enough to be able to go looking for the directors of the company to be able to find out who it was. So there is no way around it. You're going to have to do it in a structure, but the structure is going to be more difficult to find who is the ultimate person in the end. Make sure your insurance is up, because if he goes and does something stupid like burning the property, or at least you've got replacement value or more. And, you know, there's nothing else that you could do around there. I want to be able to buy and sell land without my name ever showing up. Sorry, that's going to happen if you buy it in a company and trust structure. I want the structure such that any ASIC, et cetera, search beneficiaries can't do that. I want to be able to declare the capital gains in my private tax returns so I can offset against the capital loss. That's something you're going to have to talk to your accountant about, and there's professionals around there that you can talk to. And the cherry on the top is, if I can convince a bank to do this as an option, good luck. No stamp duty and time to sell. Well, if you're going to do it as an option, well, you're not going to convince the bank. The banks will not do that on a mortgagee foreclosure. They want a straight out sale. They don't care how it's going to work. They may allow you to continue taking on the loan, but there's going to have to be a change of name down there somehow. So you're going to have to be stamp duty anyway. No QB doll, that's what Gimna says. So the answer to that is no, you can't hide yourself. There's no other way to do it except to buy it from the bank and put yourself in the positions that you need to be in so that you can look after that. Now, I wouldn't go putting any AWOS in that position if you think that someone's going to be crazy and kill someone. So sometimes they're easier to walk away from. Hi, Dimna and Ian. Okay, so this is a self-managed super fund question. Remember, I'm answering this basically as my opinion. You cannot take what I say here as concrete or solid. I'm not in the position to actually offer advice, and I don't want to here. That's why I'm going to say to you straight up, the people that you want to contact are Proctor Major in Victoria. In Sydney or New South Wales, you want to contact Clint and his team at Investor Accounting Network, which is on the contacts page. In Queensland, you want to contact Tasha from Grow Accounting. The question is there. It's about buying property in a self-managed super fund, and it's vendor financed. Do you need to set up a bear trust? Well, even if it's vendor financed, the owner of the property that's financing you is going to set up a mortgage, so you're going to need to set up a bear trust regardless, because there is a mortgage on the property, but you need to call Tash and talk to her about that. I can't stress how important this is, that I am not giving you advice here. The only advice I'm giving you is ring Tasha and talk to her. I understand with self-managed super fund, you have to ensure to keep personal and super funds and benefits completely separate. But are there any issues with doing a 50-50 JV with your self-managed super fund? No, there's not, except that there can't be any borrowings on the property. It has to be a cash deal. But again, you need to talk to Tasha and you need to talk to them. That's what you're going to have to do. I'm wanting to start up my brand or a company, advertise my services. I want to put together a website and business cards in property. I'm looking to do some subdivisions and possibly renovations by myself and sometimes with JV partners. I was wondering what sort of entity would recommend to set up my brand. Okay, so when you brand, I presume you're talking about your entity to be out there. We've got a development trust. So what it is a company. So I won't tell you the name of it, but let's call yours ABC Developments as trustee for the ABC Trust. Now, that trust is not something that's going to buy property. That's something that's going to be your trading, and you're not going to trade through the company. It's only a company worth $2, and the trust is going to be all the trading stuff. So, for example, I'm employed by my development trust. It pays me a wage. It pays my super. It pays my workers' comp. And what I do is I go out and I perform work on my other trusts that buy properties. So I've got the ABC Development Trust, and I might go and do some work on one of my companies in trust that own a property. So my 123 Proprietary Limited as trustee for the 123 Trust owns a property. And I, as an employee of my development trust, go across there and I do some work for it. And I end up billing that entity over there for the work that I've done on it. And that entity pays my development trust. And that will be usually through the money it makes in cash flow and whatever it is. It gets sourced into the development trust and it pays me a wage. Any leftover money, of course, from all of those trusts that I own, will go through if I don't want to put it towards myself because I don't want to pay the high tax bracket, then I can go and I can distribute it to my bucket company, which pays the company tax rate, and then my bucket company can lend out to my other entities as well. So what you want to do is set up a development trust or an employee trust, you want to say it, and do it. Now, you might also want to set up a flipper trust, which is a normal discretionary trust. All these trusts are exactly the same. They just perform different things. And in that, the flipper trust might be the property that might be the entity that buys a property, does some work to it, and then sells it and flips out. Now, remembering that if you buy and sell a deal in a trust, the liability of that in the future still stays in that trust. So your choice to keep on flipping deals in and out of that trust will depend on your risk factor and whether you think there could be risk down the track from a property that it's purchased and sold in the past. Some people like to close them down and start up a new one. If you're in a flipper trust and you decide you want to keep a property, well, then you can stop it being a flipper trust. Now, again, your accountants and the legal people can advise around that. I'm only giving you my opinion of my setup and how we function and how I've learned from Dimna. So that's the end of those questions. So let me go into the questions that have come in right here, and let's start right at the top. So Rodney, I currently own investment property in my personal name. I'm currently in the process of attaining a DA with the intention of subdividing and constructing a new dwelling on the rear block with the intention of holding both. I want to sell the rear block into a trust structure before building to minimise stamp duty. What is the situation as regards to capital gains? Okay, so right now, you can go to a valuer or a real estate agent or a few of them and tell them, look, I want you to give me some value right now as if it was already subdivided with the house on one block and the empty block pretending that it is subdivided, and they would put a value on it. Now, for you, it looks like potential subdividing, constructing a new dwelling on the rear block. So you've already got an old dwelling on the front. The question will be for you, how do you want to deal with this? Because eventually when you do sell, there's going to be capital gains. When you sell the block of land to yourself, there's going to be a capital gain. Eventually when you sell the house at the front, there'll be a capital gain. Now, you have to think to yourself, how do I really want this to be so that I don't have to pay capital gains up front right now for the block? So the result will be that you need to talk to your accountant about whether you want the house to be a high valuation and the land to be low, or the house to be a low valuation and the land to be high. And I'll let you do the guesswork of how you want to do that, so that when you sell it to your company and trust to minimize your stamp duty, which I understand completely, that you can minimize your capital gain at that point. Remembering that at some point in the future, if you sell either one of them, there's going to be capital gains on that too. So that sort of answers that question, I hope, Rodney. We've answered that one. Hi, Ian. I know you did due diligence just the other day, but could you have a webinar on suburb research? I'm going to do that probably next webinar, maybe with Dimpna, or depending on what Dimpna may be away for that one. But yeah, so I'm not a big fan of researching suburbs for growth of a suburb. I'm more of a fan of saying, well, there's some indicators that say that I can do work within this suburb for different reasons. You can look at history and all that sort of stuff. So I will look at that, Sandra, and put it together as a due diligence, because that's what we were going to do last webinar, but I wanted to get that action plan stuff together because we thought that that was pretty important. Final negotiations using a, so this is the next deal from Sue. I'm using a vendor finance around 25% at 5% over 5 years and a bank loan for the rest to include stamp duty and expenses. Well, you won't be able to use a bank loan for that because you're going to need cash up front. So absolutely no money down by us. I'm not sure how you're going to get away with that, because the stamp duty, a bank, and expenses a bank will not pay for. So you're going to have to do that. We have saved 50K and we're thinking to use that for the first deal, maybe chunk. We are going to do some small renos. How long should we wait before a refinance? Well, you can. That's where you're going to have to talk to your strategist and say to them that this is a deal. This is where how we're going to have to do it. Now, when you're doing a vendor finance, you are going to have to show in some way the 25% plus costs in a bank account or on a bank statement. So whether that means you're going to have to, I'm not going to say it online how you do that, but a bank will not give you a loan on 75% or 80%. Of the property if you don't have the funds to complete the deal. So that's something you're going to have to talk to about to your investor loans network strategist and broker about how you do that, and so that you can move forward with that deal. Sounds like a good deal if you can get the vendor finance and you've done your numbers around that. The refinance can be done pretty quickly. Like, you know, at the end of the day, as long as you've made some improvement to the property and the bank agrees to that, then it's not a problem. And I would be taking photos from day dot all the way through every stage, every step, everything that you've spent on it, time, all of that sort of stuff needs to go into some sort of document so that the bank that or the valuer can see that you've actually spent some money on the deal and you can revalue it. Just in case, so I'm just reading questions at the moment that have come in, so you won't be seeing them on your screen. I'm just reading them off the questions that have come in tonight. Just in case you had some time at the end, can you please give some ideas how to find builders that would do vendor finance, like Dimpna's first deal? What do you ask and who do you ask to find potential vendor finance like that? You mentioned at one of boot camps that you see great potential in this. Thanks. It's developers that you want, not builders. Builders do sometimes run short of cash, but it's more the developer. A developer that has, you know, stock in an area that's sort of not moving quick enough, or they get themselves in trouble. I like to look at that. Sometimes the agents give it up. That's asking the questions of the agents around the place. You could get on to Investar and do a vendor finance type search, or developer in trouble type. You know, you could do keyword searches, developer in trouble, or developer is committed somewhere else, all that sort of stuff you can do. And, you know, all you can do is continue to ask questions of developers and of agents, and eventually you know you'll get lots of no's, but one day you'll get a yes really quickly and you'll go, oh wow, I'm onto it. My mum was left with the property she and dad owned in her name when dad passed away, and now she's up for a $20,000 land tax bill. Does she put them into trusts and pay stamp duty on each plus setup cost of the trust, or does she leave them in her name and pay land tax? Well, it depends what state you're in. Some states have a tax threshold for each property owned in different entities. New South Wales doesn't, Victoria doesn't. You pay from a dollar. It doesn't matter what trust or whether you own it in your own name or whatever. If she's got lots of properties and she's paying 20 grand land tax, then hopefully those properties are earning her some income as well. Sorry, just one second. I'm just going to make sure my daughter gets picked up because my wife won't. So if she's earning money out of the properties, then the 20 grand tax bill is 20 grand tax bill. If you don't want the 20 grand tax bill, then sell some of the properties down or look at what potential they have to do other stuff. So the question will be, what is the real situation? Is it the fact that she's got to pay 20 grand and she's still earning lots of money on top of that, or is she losing money every year from the fact that it's costing her 20 grand and none of the properties are being let out at the right rates or they're big land holdings? So to me, there's a lot of other questions that need to be answered there. If she's paying, like again, if you're paying tax, that's a good thing. If you're losing money on paying tax because the land that you own is no good, well, then you need to look at it strategically and decide what to do from there. Hi, Ian. Looking at buying a PPR, as we're currently renting where we are living. I'm looking for something in Sydney that's a big block that I could subdivide, sell part, and then keep part to build a new house. I have been looking at a couple of properties where the end results would be equity neutral, get back my invested funds, and possibly similar interest-only payments as what I'm paying now in rent. What is your opinion on whether to buy PPR in this way or buy investment instead in the current market? And he's got another. Okay. All right. So the question here is, you go off, you do the PPR thing and you subdivide it off and you build on next door and you revalue and keep both properties. You got to be very careful here on your intention. So again, you're going to have to talk to your accountants, because if your intention is to buy a PPR and you start submitting an application for subdivision very quickly after buying it, well, the ATO is going to question whether that's the case. Especially if you've claimed some expenses through property in the past, they're going to say, "Hang on, you're a business, you're in the business of real estate, and we don't quite think the PPR thing that you're doing here is right." Now, you could buy a PPR, wait a while, do a subdivision application, do the subdivision, and then sell the block of land that you've created. And sorry, if you sell the block of land to a trust. Because you're in New South Wales, Pierre, there is laws and rules and regulations about buying it in trust from the beginning, and splitting without the stamp duty. So you need to talk again. Investor Loans Accounting Network up at Newcastle can advise you on that. So there is ability that way. So you're going to have to look at a number of different options when it comes to that. To me, if you can buy in Sydney, you can get cash flow neutral and you can get your money back to go on to other deals. I think that's a good thing. I think that's it won't get you out of your job quickly, though in saying that, it'll turn very quickly in 4 or 5, say 5 to 10 years time, where you'll have great wealth and you'll be able to sell off some of those properties and pay down the debt on the rest. The next part of Pierre's question is also, I know normally you would go P&I repayments for a PPR, but it's okay to do interest only for a few years to have extra cash flow investing. Yeah, absolutely. It's not a problem at all. I mean, your ultimate gain is to pay down your home loan on your own home, because it's bad debt. So you could decide to pay interest only, go off and do some chunk deals, make some money, distribute that chunk through to yourself in income, pay down the debt on your property, and then redraw it as good debt. So you could do it that way. I think that's the preference. For me, I'm in accumulation, so I want to try and do as much as I can with my money. If you're older, you might want to say, "Well, I want to smash down my debt. I want to pay off as quick as I can." So look, the idea is to pay down your debt on your own home so that you don't owe anything on it, and anything that you do owe on it is for investment purposes rather than personal debt. I can't help dropping out. I'm sorry. I'll come in and out a lot. Okay. So going back to that mother who was paying $20,000, remember the questions come in to me not straight after each other. So I have to keep on going back to try and remember what we were talking about. Also, she's gifting, so this is going back to the $20,000 land tax. She's gifting one property to me and I want to place it in a trust. Do I have the property transferred into the trust straight away? Do I have to pay stamp duty? Well, depends again what state you're in. And again, you'll have to get some advice from the legal people and the accounting people to what you need to do. It was more the privacy changes than just about your credit rating. Big Brother knows everything. Look, there is another article that came out today about government bodies and whether you can use an alias when you're talking to a government body. Essentially, what it came down to is if you're trying to seek credit, you can't use an alias. And there's lots of information on the credit rating site there. There's also a few articles around the changes that happen to the, you know, using aliases or similar to ask questions of government bodies so that your privacy's not in trouble. Okay, that doesn't make any sense to me, Gwendy. Remember, I've got to keep on going backwards and forwards. Before the new rules, the bank knows how many cards they look at your credit for. Yeah, of course, they all do. Can you please comment on the costs involved with strata titling? I've looked at council costs of subdivision where I live in Queensland. It's approximately $60,000 after council contributions in infrastructure charges. Is this generally a similar amount to strata processes, though I would expect fewer additional infrastructure charges if the existing lot services are used? Wondering about relative costs of strata versus subdivision. Okay, so costs of strata versus subdivision is going to change council by council. It depends if you're going in and you're looking at a block of existing units, sometimes the charges have already been paid. If you're looking at a new set of units, the infrastructure charges or the, you know, in council, in Queensland, they're called headworks charges. They're going to be exactly the same as a subdivision headworks charge. So headworks charges is a council contribution. This is Queensland, and they do it all over the country. In New South Wales, they call it a Section 94. They're different all over the country what they call them. But essentially, it's a gift from the developer, which you are, to the council to provide extra services because you're creating extra dwellings. So, you know, the new garbage truck, the new park bench, the extra street cleaners that are going to have to be bought and all that sort of stuff. And that's just a gift for you to the councils. And it doesn't matter whether you're subdividing. So every extra building that you're creating is going to incur a headworks charge. For example, if I buy a block of land that has a house on it already and I add an extra two houses, I have to pay two headworks charges. If I buy a block of land that already exists that with no houses on it and I want to build three, someone has already paid one because there's a block of land that exists and I will have to pay two extra headworks charges. So it's not much different for strata. The only extra costs that are different in the subdivision versus the strata is that with a subdivision, you need to provide extra services to each block, sometimes a driveway, depending on what type of subdivision it is. And that will then that will also mean that they might need some concrete and compaction testing and all that sort of stuff. Yes, and if you've got the right VAT, so the next question is about from John. Hi, John, I've sent you an email today. VATA will also send you alert when someone has actually hit your credit file so that you know that something's going on. So when you do a bank application for a mortgage, well, sorry, when you do a finance application for a mortgage, you will normally, if you've got the service, get a email saying that someone's just done a hit. You can go in and see who did the hit. Regarding the credit changes, would commercial credit that you have a guarantor for be listed? Yeah, I mean, if you're a guarantor on any mortgage of any sort, it will show up because it will be listed on a title somewhere. Is there any way to find out how much is outstanding on a mortgagee sale as per Barry's question? Not really, not unless you're asking questions to the bank direct and they answer them. You can find, you can do a search, a title search, and it will tell you who holds the mortgage on the property. So whether it's Commonwealth Bank or whoever. So, yeah, you've got to look at that from the perspective of, no, you're not going to find out the amount unless you can ask questions the right way of the agent or the owners or the bank, and they will answer it. Some of them, most of them won't answer it. Okay, This one's a big one. Hi, in interesting info. Can you explain the capital gains benefit of selling a property from a trust? I am down my PPR and building, you're knocking down your PPR and building two townhouses. One is in my name, one in my name and one in a trust, which I plan to sell. So I presume that you're going to do a Torrens title split, depending where you are as well, and you're going to move one to a trust because currently it's in your name. You can't go on one title, build two townhouses and just go, oh, I'm giving that one to the trust for nothing. You have to look at what state you are and what that means. Am I correct that the capital gains saving is a benefit on selling from that trust? No. No, look, that question there, it's a pretty detailed question. The capital gain is a capital gain. It's a tax that you're going to have to pay. How you use it is a different story. Because it's a PPR and how long it's been a PPR, it says 5 years. So your intention wasn't at the time to actually do the townhouses. So your intention was to use, you're just using the property to its best advantage. I would give those figures to your accountant, and I would then say that they can give you some feedback. I would get a number of accountants to look at it, and because you want to be confident. Some questions from accountants will be answered in many different ways. Okay, so stop sending questions in because I'm not going to get to them anymore because there's a few more going. Lee's saying, your question before about the bank foreclosure, if the guy is renting, would he actually see the contract? If his concern is just the current tenant, he shouldn't see it as he has no ownership. So it shouldn't matter, should it? Well, what he's worried about is that the tenant's actually not paying any rent. He doesn't want to move out and he's mentally not stable. So what the student's saying is if he went in and bought the property under the nose of the tenant, who's not paying at the moment, the tenant would have to be kicked out. The tenant would get upset. He could go and do a company search, find out who bought it by finding out who the directors of the company is and then go chasing them. So yes, that would be the danger. Sally and Dave, I have a question regarding loan contracts. I recently purchased a property to renovate and then on sell, and the finance company I chose made the process much more difficult than they had to. Well, no, not really. They all do it. They all find it. I'm yet to have a loan mortgage settle without any problems either before or after it settles. So that's part of the game here. They only got it together when I said I was going elsewhere. We settled a little over a month ago and thought that would be it. Wrong. I got a letter last week saying they were sorry, but they'd lost my loan contract. And could I kindly sign another one and send it back? No, stuff them. If I hadn't been a woman of integrity and signed it, would they have any legal leg to stand on to demand I continue to pay? A hypothetical question as I did the right thing, but I am curious. Many thanks. It'd be interesting, actually. I'm sure they'd be able to find a way. Surely they would have some way of being able to take you to court if you wanted to find out about that. But yeah, technically, surely they'd have a copy somewhere, and you know, they would have their name on the title because they've actually settled the loan. So their name would be on title. So they would be able to do it that way. I don't think you'd have a leg to stand on if you stopped paying. Yes, Jared, you are a stalker. How can one know how much replacement is amount on insurance policy to get an accurate insurance cover? You can go on to Sanders, you could be asking me this question. You can go on to BMT, tax depreciation, and they've got a calculator online there where you put in the square meters and the type of house. Some insurance companies have online calculators. How many properties are permitted per trust? Well, Sanders, you can put thousands of them in your trust. How much are you willing to risk? Because if you've got two properties in a trust and one of them has a potential to be sued because a tenant falls over or whatever reason, that means that everything in that trust is up for grabs. So if you want to put multiple properties into a trust, go for your life, but you are in danger of losing it if someone wants to sue if they are in the one trust. So Dimpner generally says, depending on the value of it and how much you're willing to lose, one house per trust per company. is what she says. Can you advise on the process of lifting a title or titles? Does Section 94 apply, or is that just for subdivision and strata? Again, the Section 94 will depend on the council and whether it was paid originally when the two lots were in. I've done a lift of a title before, and we didn't have any subdivision costs to pay, any Section 94s to pay, because that council had originally allowed for it to happen. The general rule is that if there is a lot there, there probably has been a contribution to council already paid. To lift the title, if you've got a bank involved, it will be a process that means that you will need to you'll need to do your documentation. A surveyor will have to prepare it and make sure it's right. It'll have to be pegged. You've got to make sure that the service is there. The council has to agree to it all. You then have to tell the bank that you're doing it because they're splitting their security into two. Then you need to go to the Lands Titles office. Then the Lands Titles office has to approve it. Then it goes back to the bank and the bank splits it. And then you've got two separate titles. So it's a relatively simple process, much easier than subdivision because you don't have to do much work. And you go from there. Jared, I'm looking at a large block in town that is suitable for a three-way split. It faces two streets, so no access issues. The only issue is that it's fairly steep. Any advice on building costs on a steep site? I don't like steep sites. The council doesn't like steep sites, especially if it's not already a dual lot or triple lot property and you need to do a subdivision. The council may have some rules and regulations around the fall on the land, and they may say, no, we're not going to approve it because it's got too much fall. So you need to talk to a planner around that. As far as building, well, I don't think it's terribly expensive compared to normal blocks. You're going to have to obviously do a post and bearer type construction with the fall of the land in the right direction. So there's some really great products out there, Jared, that you could look at. Mega Anchor, if you Google Mega Anchor, or Mega Anchor is one of them. That's a really simple process of putting posts up. And the other one is made by BHP, and it's called, Unipier, U-N-I-Pier. And you can build up, you can have piers up to 3 meters high concreted, or the Mega Anchors are actually no concrete at all. You just need to get an engineer to design it. Pierre, if I buy a block in partnership with my brother with the intention of building a duplex for our PPRs, assuming that we can subdivide the two dwellings, is it best to buy the original block as a normal 50-50 partnership in our general names? Any other issues? Yeah, I would say yes, buy it in a 50-50 partnership, that get a loan together as a 50-50 partnership. Remembering, though, that as soon as you got the ability to split, I would go individual ways, because if you go to a bank between your brother and yourself and you say, we want a loan for $400,000, the bank doesn't see $200,000 to Pierre and $200,000 to your brother. They see $400,000 to both of you. So your serviceability gets affected by doing a 50-50 property deal. So that's why when you get to the point where you've got enough income, where we're at the moment, I do all the lending in my name and I don't involve Christine, because we can double our lending power because of our incomes being separate, and we can move forward with that. So I hope that answers the question. Will this recording be available on the Ultimate site tomorrow? Maybe not tomorrow. It'll take a few days. It depends on how busy Reed is in the Knowledge Source office, but I send it to him tonight and he puts it up there. From Teresa, I have someone wanting to buy my property on vendor finance. Can he take over my mortgage and give me cash up front and pay an amount over the loan in form of vendor finance? Yes, he can. Now, let's think about this. So he's going to take over your loan. So it's going to be in your name. He's going to be paying your loan. I've actually got a deal very similar that I'm doing at the moment. So I've got a 5-year option deal. And in that option, I've given someone money up front, and they have now stepped away from the property, and I'm paying his mortgage, I'm paying the council, I'm paying the water, I'm paying for any maintenance. Essentially, he's debt-free except for a mortgage being on there. Now, remember, I've given him an amount of money. So the person that gives you money, Teresa, is going to have some form of security, in which case you could put an option deal together. So a put and call option. So there is a time in the future where they have to settle on the property. They give you some money up front now. And because he's given you some money, he may not know his stuff. But for me, if I gave you some money and I took over your loan, I want to make sure that I've got security in the deal so that you can't go and sell it to anyone without me knowing. So I would then go and place a second mortgage or a caveat on the property showing my monetary interest in the property. So that's what I've done with this other property. We gave him $50,000. We're paying his loan and all that sort of stuff. And I then went to the bank. Well, I didn't. Pacific Law did it for me. They went into the bank, his bank, and said, we've got an interest in the property. We're putting a caveat over the top of the property. Now, the banks don't like that, but it is what it is. Now, in that, Teresa, you've got to be very careful because that could affect your serviceability when you go for other loans because it's showing in your name. Although you could show the contract, the option contract, where he pays for everything, and then there's no problem. So, yes, you can do it that way, Teresa, but just remember your serviceability and remember that he may want protection to do that. Okay, Sue, yep, well done. Yes, they remember that the coming in and out of sound happens because of your connection or my connection. Hi, Ian, how to pay a chunk of stamp duty when we subdivide and put the lift titling on the land? If we hold it for a while, will it be a stamp duty? And what about the linen planning fee and how much is it in New South Wales? If you are not moving if you subdivide a block of land into two blocks, there's no stamp duty that happens. The ownership stays in the same name. In New South Wales, you're talking, there's rules and regulations about being able to move it to other entities, and that's where you need to talk to the investor accounting networks in New South Wales. They can help you out. So that you don't have to pay stamp duty when you split the land because it's going to stay in the same ownership or in New South Wales as other things. So you'll only have to pay stamp duty if you want to sell it to another entity. Again, New South Wales has different rules and regulations. The rest of the country is not like that. Okay, John, got that one. I'd like to get your advice. Geez, there's a lot of questions. Stop sending questions in. I'm not going to get them. I've only got another few minutes and that's it. I'd like to get advice on a scenario. I don't give advice. I can only give you my opinion if I was standing in your shoes. Me and my husband moved to Australia 2 years ago and are currently renting at $1,660 per month. In the past 2 years, we have saved $20,000 and invested a lot of different forms of education. My annual income is $100,000 and my husband is a freelance graphic designer who has been working on his English and studying along with some internet business. I've been looking at different scenarios to start my real estate project. Jesus, this is a long one. I'll tell you what you can do, Miriam. You need to send this question into questions@realestatesuccess.com.au. I'll actually type it in the box. questions@realestatesuccess.com.au. I've just sent that on the chat box. That's a really long question, and to go through that now would be difficult. So we can answer that one in the next month's webinar. Back to Pierre. Yeah, I think that's clear now from the last question. If you buy it with your brother, then it's fine. I'd like to purchase an old house and develop into two units side by side. I would like to deal with my parents. They are currently renting. They are pensioners. I would keep my unit and rent it, and they would move into the other one as a PPR. What is the best way to set up our JV? We'll refinance the project, but they will be my main partners. Should I buy the house, land in both names? Again, Robert, use the professionals that are available for that question there. Go off and talk to Pacific Law. Tell them what you want to do. It'll always also – and to also do talk to your strategist. They're going to be the ones that will also be able to give you some really good qualified advice about how to set that up and how that will affect you, your serviceability, and your parents' serviceability as well, because they are pensioners. That may be difficult. Hi, Ian. How are you? I'm fantastic. Thank you for asking. We can borrow $500K. Thinking of doing a chunk deal. Being a builder myself, am I better – off buying a cheap house in an expensive area or buying two properties in a cheaper. That's going to come down to your own circumstances, Zoran. You know, to me, I always say, Dipner always says, if you can buy one property and do multiple strategies, the more strategies you can do on one property, the better off you're going to be. And that's the best way to go. Can Pacific Law help structuring my IT consulting business as well as property investments? Absolutely. Talk to Derek at Pacific Law. He is fantastic with that stuff, and he'll always get back to you. Zoran, you asking what area to buy in? That's going to be you and where you are. Australia's a big country, so you're going to have to decide for yourself on that one. Hi, Ian. When you say after doing the deal you can get your money back out of it, could you please comment on serviceability to fund that amount? As the issue I have is that the deal can return the original amount invested, but I can't service that amount. Well, in that case, you're going to have to sell it. So pretty simple. If you can't revalue the property because your serviceability is shot, or you need increased serviceability, then you may need to go somewhere else, sell that property and go off and do another one. At the same token, though, remember that that property, you're trying to increase its rental yield, and the bank will look at generally 6% of its yield and add it to your serviceability. But if you can't get a loan, then you're going to have to move forward on that. Hi, Ian. What might the criteria for renovating an existing dwelling on a DCP zoned property in Brisbane? Development control plan zoned property. Well, it depends what development control plan you're talking about. The house is pretty rough, but the block is good for subdivision. I presume you mean development demolition control precinct. Okay. DCP in New South Wales means a completely different thing to one in Brisbane. So a development control precinct, well, you're going to have to get an engineer's report to say that the house is shot, that the house is not fit to live in, and that it will fall over, in which case, if you can do that, then you can quickly... you can get an engineer during the due diligence phase to put something together and then ask the council and see what they say. That's essentially the way you have to, you'll have to show some that it's not good. I have a line of credit using equity in our PPR. I use the line of credit to pay the deposit for our investment property and borrow the rest from another bank. So the investment is 100% borrowed money, yes? We have some saving that we might want to use for something else. It is better to put our savings into the line of credit or other mortgage. Well, I mean, if you've got an offset account, the more... You know, if you put your cash into a bank, it's going to pay you 4%. When you redraw your money, it's going to cost you 6%. So the smart thing to do will be to use it as an offset against your loans. So, you know, the idea is to minimize your interest if you can. But then again, at the same token, you can't. Yeah, well, you're lending, so you have to lend. So you'll have a mortgage document across to your trust structure for the 20% plus costs. So that regardless, the offset is better because you'll minimize your tax. Okay, I'd like you, Michael Ra, I'd like you to email me tomorrow about that one. Okay, we're doing all the work and paying all our costs on a really big and complex renovation. The property owner and us will split sales profits 50-50 after all costs. Are deducted. In your opinion, what is the maximum amount per hour we could charge to the project for our professional labor? Well, firstly, it says Barry and Michael, and you've come in Zoe. So I want you to clarify for me first, Barry and Michael, why you've come in as Zoe, and then I may answer that question for you. How long does it usually? I presume you're talking about lifting the title. It'll depend on how good you are. But essentially, the land titles office is 3 weeks to 4 weeks. The bank will be probably 4 weeks, and you need to tell your strategist and mortgage broker what you're doing ahead of schedule so that they know what's going, and the council can be another 4 weeks. So it could be anywhere from 3 to 5 months, depending on how good you are at doing. I know about building on steep blocks, absolutely. Most councils are starting to not allow redevelopment on a site of greater more than 4 to 1, 1 to 4 ratio as far as 4 is concerned. So when you're talking about a 1 to 4 ratio on the slope of the land, it means for every 4 metres, there's 1 metre of vertical rise. And if it's more than that, then they won't like you. Not a question. I'm listening to a heap of podcasts, but the volume is too low on almost every one. Can you mention to Reedy that they need to be turned up? No, can't do that. Get yourself some bigger speakers and some subwoofers. I've got some stuck in my old car when I was 17. Okay. All right. We are Zoe's house. So my question, Barry and Michael, is are you members of the Ultimate website? Because I can't go answering questions to non-members. I don't mean to be rude, but that's unfair to everyone else that's online that's been here for a reason. You know about subdividing steep blocks. Did you build? No. So what Jared's talking about there is I actually did a subdivision on a block that had 25% grade one way and 25% the other. It was my first subdivision. It was 110 meters long. My initial budget was 60 grand. I spent $240,000 on it, and it was my massive learning curve. I don't regret doing that for one second. I would have been a lot smarter if I'd looked at other people and the mistakes they made, but I made mistakes for myself because I had got a big ego. And I learned a lot from it, and it set me up for other stuff in the future. So all good. Hi, Michael. This is Zoe. We're all doing a JV together. I've been with Dipman for many years. Is that okay? Okay, no worries. All right, so it comes down to your hourly rate when you're doing a JV deal can come down to your experience, can come down to lots of different things. So, for example, when I first started doing joint venture deals, I didn't charge any money at all. My part of the deal was I went in there and I did the work for free, and I was paid out of the fact that I made money for the money partner. And I got 50% of that, or 40% of that, or 60% of that. It depends on what deal you're doing. And the end result will be what two people agree to is what a joint venture is made up out of. So nowadays, though, I've got a lot more experience. I've got runs on the board, and if a joint venture partner wants to play with me, because I used to want to play with joint venture partners, now it's the other way around because I've got my own stuff going on. Then I now go to the point where I go, well, actually, I want some money for my hourly rate at the time. Now, you know, you've got to work out what you think is a fair and reasonable hourly rate if that's what you decide as joint venture partners. And what the profit split's going to be and all that sort of stuff there. So, again, a joint venture is only going to be what two people agree upon. And then the joint venture document shows that and signals that. So, okay, that's enough for me. Remember that you can send questions in to questions@realestatesuccess.com.au. That's questions@realestatesuccess.com.au. I'm sorry if I'm a little bit short with a few of you. I just need to protect the brand of what Dipman's put together here. I hope I answered most questions. Like I said, Michael Ra, you can send me the question tomorrow and we'll go through that. And for the rest of you, thanks for coming along. I hope to see you soon. We've got a boot camp in Sydney this week. So if you wanted to come to that boot camp and you've already been to one, ring up Knowledge Source, pay $4.95 and you can get a reboot, and you know, people come back to boot camps because you get that extra bit of information, that different level of learning, and the understanding changes for you. And thank you for all the thank yous for those people that are sending them in. I love you all too. And Antonio says good night.